I'm glad you're all here tonight. As you can see on the screen, me and David are continuing our study in the book of Psalms, moving into Psalms chapter 12. The chapter setting for Psalms 12, it tells us that it is a song of David, and we can see by the wording of this psalm that it protests the sinfulness of man. And, you know, it could be just David's general comment of how man is sinful, or it could be referring to a specific point in David's life. But because of that wording, it could apply to any point in David's life, really. We can't nail it to a specific instance in his life. But it does talk about the righteous man, David, living in the sin of this world and struggling to come to terms with that and struggling to deal with that as he goes. So that's what I will be covering in my portion of the study tonight, how the righteous are to live in this wicked world, mainly focusing on how David showed us examples of that in his life. I'm going to start in Ecclesiastes 7, verse 10. It says, "Do not say, 'Why were the former days better than these?' For you do not inquire wisely concerning this." You know, a lot of times we hear or say, you know, it's getting worse than it's been, or, it, you know, we don't know if it's getting any worse than it's ever been. It may be getting better, it may be getting worse. The fact of the matter is that there is sin in this world, and we're going to have to deal with it in our lives. And that is what is important about that. Whether it gets better, whether it gets worse in our lives, there's going to be sin, and we're going to have to deal with it. One way that we deal with that and cope with that is we don't strive to be like the wicked. Proverbs 24:19, verse 19 and 20 says, "Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out." As verse tells, it says, don't worry because of evildoers. But then it goes on, it doesn't just say don't worry about them. It goes on to say don't be envious of the wicked. Why would it tell us that? If you ever think, you know, we look around or we hear sometimes, well, they're doing something that looks fun. We hear that word fun. And sin does bring us pleasure. It would be stupid to say that sin isn't pleasurable to our flesh. But that pleasure that it brings is momentary. You know, it gives the example that the lamp of the wicked will be put out. Think of a fire. That fire is going to burn as long as it has fuel, oxygen, and as long as you don't put it out. It doesn't last very long. You light a fire in your fireplace, if you don't put wood in that, it's going to burn out. And that's like the pleasure of the sin, or the pleasure of sin in this world. It's momentary. It doesn't last. You got to keep adding fuel to it. You have to keep doing it. It's not going to provide any lasting joy to us. So that fun that we see the world having in sin, we shouldn't strive to have fun with them. Psalms 1:1-5 says, verses 1 and 5 says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous." His verse tells us, it says, blessed is the man. Blessed is the man who what? Who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. Blessed is this man who doesn't go out and seek association with ungodly people, doesn't seek their counsel, doesn't go and seeking their company. He says, blessed is this man, because it says in verse 5, once again, it says, the ungodly shall not stand the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. Look over to David's life, the people that he was friends with and close with. Think of Jonathan. You know, think of Jonathan's father versus Jonathan. You have Saul, this evil, wicked man who tried to kill David on multiple occasions, chased him around the kingdom. And you have Jonathan who, you know, saved David's life on multiple occasions, gave him so much and was as close as two friends as we can find, pretty much. He was a godly man. He was a good man. These were the people that David associated with, the good people, people he could trust, people who had the same values as him. He didn't go out and seek to associate with evil, wicked people. No, he went and spent time and was friends with people who were godly and had the same values as him. One thing that helps when we are having issues with this wicked world is we can pray about it. Philippians 4, 6 through 7 says, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." It says, be anxious for nothing. It says, don't worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. You know, I think David is one of the best, if not the best, example of prayer we have in the Bible. In everything, he came and prayed to God. We have examples of Psalms where he gave praise to God for the things that God had done for him. But we also have examples of when David was going through a tough time, you know. We've even covered some of those in his rebellion, when Absalom rebelled against him, where he's going through a difficult point in his life, where his own son was rebelling against him, trying to kill him. His father-in-law was chasing him, trying to kill him. You don't think that beat David down? And we see him going to prayer, going to God in prayer, and bringing those to God and saying, you know, help me with this. Deliver me from these. And what is also amazing about David is it says here in the verse, you can say, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known. He always gave thanks to God for everything he did. He always praised God. Even when he had a request or said, this is hard, please take this, please help me through this difficult time, he always gave praise to God. In the same chapter, in the same verse, later on, we always see David giving us that example. When he was struggling with the sin of this world and the things that he was going through in his life. Psalms 55, verse 22 says, "Cast your burden on the Lord, and he shall sustain you. He shall never permit the righteous to be moved." God is that person we can talk to about our sin problems and say, I'm having issues with this. Please help me with this. Please help me get through this. He's that person we can talk to about that. If we don't know who we could talk to in the church or we don't feel comfortable doing that, we can always go to God in prayer and say, help me with this. I'm struggling. We have to be strong and courageous. 1 Corinthians 16 verse 13, it says, "Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, and be strong." This verse is very simple. It says, be brave and be strong, along with watch and stand fast in the faith. Once again, going back to David, when he was exiled from Israel, did he lose his, you know, moral compass, his standards, his goal in life? No, he still went and fought battles in Israel's name, even though Saul was chasing him. He still went and did things for Israel. He still, you know, Saul was delivered unto him twice. But that was the king of Israel, and he wasn't going to bring his hand against God's anointed, even though he knew he could. Even in the hardest times in David's life, He stood fast in his faith. He was strong in what he believed in. He did everything he could to do what was right. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what ye are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you might be able to bear it." One thing we hear nowadays is, you know, well, you don't understand what I'm going through, or I couldn't take it. It was too much. And this verse contradicts that. It says, no temptation has overtaken you such as is common to man. You know, we're told in the Bible that Jesus was tempted as all in all ways as we are. There are other people in the world who deal with the same sins that we do. They know what we're going through. We're not alone in whatever we face in our daily lives. And God, even if that thing seems too hard to overcome, He always made a way out of it, makes a way out of it for us, it says. But with the temptation will also make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Even though it may not be easy, it may not be what the decision we want to make or wanted, the way we want to go about it, God's always going to make a way out of it. We have to be strong enough to make that decision, to do the right thing, to follow God's commandments, to follow what we believe in, no matter what's going on around us. We have to focus on the eternal, not the temporal. 2 Corinthians 4:16-18 says, therefore we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. You know, we're promised, you know, a life in heaven if we remain true to God. But that's not going to be easy for us all the time. It's not something we can look up and see and say, hey, there's heaven. We can't do that. We have to have faith in that, that it's there. And it may seem like this world is just going to go on forever and it's just going to get more evil and more evil and it's just going to keep going. But it's temporary. It's not going to last. And we have to remember that. You know, thinking back to David, he had a promise as well. It wasn't the same promise we have today, but he had a promise that his seed was going to be established, and from that seed would come the Messiah. So he knew that whatever, no matter what he faced, somehow God was going to deliver him from that. That he was going to be okay. And the same thing is true for us. We may face horrible, awful things in this life, but if we remain true to God and follow Him and His example and His word, it doesn't matter what happens to us. That home in heaven is always going to be there. It's eternal. It's not temporary. We have to stay on God's side. Romans 8, verse 31 says, what then shall we say to these things? For God, if God is with us, who can be against us? You know, once again, David had that promise. He knew that no matter what, God would deliver him. No matter how bleak things seemed, there would be a way out. Because God was on his side. God would deliver him from that. And if we stay on God's side, if we follow his commandments, God will deliver us as well. Because God will deliver the righteous. 2 Peter 2:6-9 says, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeking and hearing their lawless, by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. Here, it talking about Lot living in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, terrible, awful cities, sinful cities, wicked cities, and how much it beat him down in his daily life, how much it brought him down, seeing and hearing all the sins that went on in that city. And yet, God delivered him from those cities. God delivered the righteous from the wicked, out of the temptation, just like he will deliver us if we remain true to him, is if we remain righteous, if we stay out of the sin of this world, if we follow his commandments. That concludes my portion of the study. I will now hand it off to David.
So Carson has framed for us the principles that underpin what this song is about. We get into Psalms chapter 12. We read about man's problem, man's struggle. The first four verses, he said, "Help, Lord, for the godly man ceases. The faithful disappear from among the sons of men. They speak idly, everyone with his neighbor. With flattering lips and double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things, who have said, 'With our tongue we will prevail. Our lips are our own.' Who is Lord over us?" When you think about the circumstances of David's life, it's very easy to imagine any number of times that could have been in his mind as he wrote about this. In the things that he suffered, his exile from Saul when he was fleeing for his life, when his son Absalom chased him off, at other times when he was facing a variety of adversaries, you could just pick a point in his life in some of those turmoils and imagine him looking around saying, the godly people have ceased. There's no more good people left. Now, he would have known better, and you and I know better when we have those feelings. But when life gets us down, those kind of feelings are very real, and we have to learn to contend with them. The faithful disappear. Imagine the time when David was in despair running from Saul. Saul was hot on his tail. He gets to where the priests are, and they fulfill the law's requirement in allowing David to eat of their food. So David and his companions ate of their food and then fled on down the road, and Saul comes in behind him and finds out that the priest did that and gives the order that they all be killed. Saul's own soldiers wouldn't do it. It was so evil, even they knew better. But there stood Doeg the Edomite, who was more than happy to kill the priest of God's people. One of them escapes and comes and tells David. Imagine how his heart must have sank at that moment in his time. That's the kind of times where a guy says, you know what, there's just no good people left. And in that pit of sour emotion, that seems real. The reality is, no, there's still some good people out there, David. But in that moment of despair, those feelings come. All this that he talks about, flattery and people speaking with a double heart, how many times do we find him serving the betterment of Israel, whether he's fighting against the Philistines or slaying Goliath or delivering some of them from other enemies in the area, and then some of those same people that he served turned against him and accept bribes or the offer of bribes from Saul in order to reveal David's whereabouts. He was encountering people that were speaking double-mindedly, wasn't he? Those flattering lips that he talked about, his own son was guilty of that. Flattering the people of Israel as they came to the king's gate for judgment. "Oh, I wish I was your judge. I wish I was your king. I'd make a fair case for you. I'd rule in your favor." And on he flattered as he slowly won the hearts of the people with shallow flattery, just like a politician. And David got wind about all those things as he had to flee Jerusalem for his life and go out to Olivet, and barefooted and with a covering over his head, weeping, he ascended up that mountain as he slowly trod and grieved what had happened to him. Those there are the times that your mind focuses in and zeroes in on those people that have that attitude. Who's Lord over us? We find that attitude in Pharaoh's heart in Exodus 5 and verse 2. Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." We love the Lord. We love God. We love Jesus, His Son. And it's hard for us to understand somebody that just has a heart to defy God and say, I'll do what I want. Who's Jesus? Who is God that I should, you know, they're not interested in them or the Bible. They don't believe in any of it. And that makes us feel discouraged. So as Carson pointed out in the setting of the psalm, we could easily tag this as any one of these particular moments in David's life, or we could just see it as a general protest of the sinfulness of man. Either way, it relates to how we sometimes feel. We see, you know, this recent ruling, and I think it was in the state of New York, where they're allowing the slaughter of unborn children right up to the time of delivery. And you probably saw the pictures, the videos of those politicians high-fiving each other at making the agreement that that could be done. And you see something like that, and I don't know how our heart couldn't sink in a feeling of despair of just how bad can it get? It's been worse than that before. It's been this bad before. Mankind is on a continual cycle of just up and down, and it's always wallowing in sin ever since the fall in the garden. So what do we do? What is God's answer? Well, Carson laid out precepts from the Scriptures that speak to God's answer to these things, the counsel that we not walk after them, we don't become envious, we don't be like them, but instead we choose to embrace God, which sets us apart from the world, and we live faithful to God, and we do these things. And we're careful to not let ourselves sink from that point of despair into just giving up and going after sin. Look at God's answer and how that compares with the things that He presented. Continuing in the psalm in chapter 12, verse 5 through 8. He said, "For the oppression of the poor, for the sighing of the needy. Now I will arise, says the Lord. I will set him in the safety for which he yearns. The words of the Lord are pure words like silver tried in a furnace of earth, purified seven times. You shall keep them, O Lord. You shall preserve them from this generation forever. The wicked prowl on every side when vileness is exalted among the sons of men." God's answer is when He sees the oppression of the poor, when He hears the sighing or the groaning of those that are needy and those that are being abused and mistreated, such as things that David experienced in the sad moments of his life, the Lord's answer is, I will arise, I'm going to judge, I'm going to deliver these people. And He'll ultimately do that on the day of judgment. When Christ comes back to this earth, He will slay the wicked, so to speak. He will punish them. And He will deliver those who have suffered at the hands of the wicked. You shall keep them, O Lord, He promised. And so just like we see in David's life, he had that perpetual promise and hope of God's ultimate deliverance, delivering him from all these things that afflicted him. So it is with you and I today, placing our hopes in the eternal deliverance that God offers. And how do we contend with living in a world that makes our heart sink and makes us sorrowful? By holding on to that hope, by hearing God's answer. Curious statement, verse 8. When the wicked prowl on every side, vileness is exalted. The wicked prowl on every side when vileness is exalted. Do you believe that vileness is exalted in the Western world today? In our country, in other countries in the West? Yeah, that's not new. Vileness is exalted in the East, too. We may be more aware of it here. It may be a different brand that's exalted in some of those Eastern nations. But vileness has been exalted among men since the fall in the garden. And so he said, when vileness is exalted, the wicked will prowl on every side. Man can cycle into those phases of getting more evil when people make excuses to exalt sin and defend sin and to uphold it as a good thing. We see a lot of examples of that in our culture today. When you look at that statement in verse 8, does it feel out of place to you? I mean, we're reading all these verses that says God's going to fix it. The Lord's going to keep them. He's going to preserve the righteous. Everything's going to be all right. And then all of a sudden, boom, this negative news about the wicked prowling on every side while others uphold sin. Was that not David's experience? What we have here is, even though verse 8 feels a little bit out of place, when you think about David's life and David's experiences and our own lives and our own experiences, it makes total sense. On the one hand, you've got a person of God clinging to their hope in God. And then on the other hand, you've got the sorrowful realization that as long as this life goes on, there's going to be these sinful problems. David suffered. There was never a time he could just stop and say, okay, it's finally over, until he died. I'm sorry, I'd like to have better news than that, but you've got the book. You can read the story. It wasn't just Saul. It wasn't just Absalom. It was other forces and evil turning against him and things going this way and that troubled him till the time of his death. But now he doesn't have to worry about it. On the one hand, the heart is lifted at the song of hope in verse 5 through 7. On the other hand, we still have to confront those feelings expressed in verse 8 of living in a wicked world. The answer is put this way in Romans 8 and verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. When you go back in your mind to the previous slide with those verses up there, verse 5, 6, and 7 is that hope of the glory that will be revealed in us. And verse 8 is a reiteration of the sufferings of the present time. Whatever we suffer, whatever we endure, whatever we have to bear up against, living in a world that's stained by sin, that's all going to be swept away and swallowed up in the joys of heaven. David could endure the wickedness of man because of his hope in God. And we can too. And we place our hope in God because we know that our natural inclination is to be wicked as well. But we've made a choice to turn against that and follow God. And by the power of God's love and His mercy and the sacrifice of Christ, we now have that lively hope that can sustain us and carry us on our way. That hope needs to be yours. If you're not a child of God, you need to embrace that hope that only exists in Jesus. And we want to invite you to do that. Or if as a Christian you need the church to pray for you, to help you contend with the wicked that is around us in this world, we'd love to offer you our prayers. If we can help you in either way, please come while we stand and while we sing.